From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. A spectacular photo book landed on my desk recently with two snowy egrets on the cover, an extravagance of fluffy plumes balanced on long black spindles. The book is titled simply Waterbirds. The photographer is Theodore Cross. He's 85, and he only came to love birds and photographing them in midlife. Mr. Cross has had a long career in law and publishing. He's an expert on black economic development, but birds, well, they are his passion. And he's traveled hundreds of thousands of miles to find them, whimbrels and godwits, auklets and plovers and puffins. Theodore Cross's quest for a bird called the Red Knot took him 600 miles north of the Arctic Circle. He could have stayed home in New Jersey to see the Red Knot in migration, but he wanted to find it nesting.
The bird nests in the tundra. It's well disguised. It's well camouflaged. But it's a gorgeous, gorgeous creature. It's probably one of the most exciting birds in my life. And I've spent a lot of time with it.
Its migration takes it from Patagonia all the way up to the high Canadian Arctic, 8,000-mile flight.
Yeah, it goes up further than the others.
Well, how did that quest for finding the nest of the Red Knot, how did that work out?
It was a long 7-day journey. We just marched the tundra until we finally saw one.
Let's describe the Red Knot. She's a pretty thing.
Yeah, there's a good picture of her there. Actually, in South America in the winter, she's a very, very dull sort of mousy brown bird when she's down there. But then she starts flying. And say in maybe April she leaves. She's flying across the great mountains of Brazil, thousands of miles, and she turns this beautiful red russet. She's a Cinderella bird. She turns into something absolutely gorgeous when she arrives in New Jersey. But they are truly gorgeous, and they have this tremendous courage and determination. You know, they have a little heart and lungs about the size of an end of a pencil, and it pumps away for 8,000 miles until they get to where they're going. It's the courage of these guys that appeals to me tremendously.
Huh. Now, why do you think that is?
I don't know. I don't know. It is the... You know, the perching birds can be quite beautiful, but the water birds have courage, they have beauty, they do fantastic acrobatics. I remember as a little boy, I marveled when a woman named Gertrude Ederle swam the English Channel, and I adored that woman for years and years and years. But you compare her feet with what a Red Knot does, and, you know, it diminishes its importance.
Mr. Cross, you write in the beginning of this book that you spent many, many years not noticing birds at all. So when did this take over? When did this become a passion for you?
It's a strange thing. I was in the Navy for 2.5 years in the Pacific, and our beat was to travel from Ulithi to these little islands out there. They're really quite big islands. Now, at the time, I know there were millions of birds around me all the time. And I didn't notice them. I was 18 years old. Of course, at wartime, you have other things to notice, like being seasick or having some terrible disease in your armpit. I was totally ignorant of birds, didn't care one bit. Then whammo, 20 years later, there may have been some sort of a subliminal effect that these guys had on me. I don't know. But they became a very important part of my life. It's like a disease, I suppose. It's a disease like golf, except for family and friends. There's few things I care more about.
I can tell you have a special place in your heart for the reddish egrets, and there are some just stunning pictures of them here in this book that you took in Texas on Green Island. And there's one, I swear, this bird looks like Phyllis Diller. It's got this incredible white plumes of feathers all the way down the head and
well,
long neck.
That's interesting, Phyllis Diller.
I
think of the mad woman in the attic, hair going in all sorts of directions. Yeah, they're one of my favorite birds, maybe the best. And probably 80% of them are congregated in a little island off South Texas. And I've been going there every blasted year for 30 years. The island is loaded with rattlesnakes. What happens is the rattlesnakes wake up in the winter, and the eggs of the birds appear, and the rattlesnakes have a feast. But despite the rattlesnakes and water moccasins, I've been down there faithfully every year to see this crazy bird. And that's one of the great birding experiences of the world. You know, if you have snake guard boots and all the paraphernalia you need to travel in that kind of environment.
You write about the feeding dance that the reddish egrets do. Tell me about that.
Yeah, they do this marvelous feeding dance. They run around acting like drunken sailors. They throw up their wings to create a shade so that the fish think it's sanctuary, and it isn't sanctuary, it's death, because then the reddish egret can see the fish. And it just goes absolutely wild. There's no other creature on earth that goes through those gyrations.
I keep coming back to a picture of, this is a beautiful bird, a white tern, a delicate, all white.
Oh, isn't that
black
cute?
But here's
cute
the thing that
guy.
Gets me. Yeah, really, really cute.
Yeah.
They lay their eggs not in nests. They just, they lay them on a tree branch, and they're just sort of, there's a picture of the bird sitting right next to the egg, and you just know that egg has a really good chance of falling off or getting eaten. It's, there it is.
Sure. Well, you get a good windstorm, and that egg will go. And they just lay another one. You know, they're very pragmatic. They became quite famous during the war because the Marines adored them. They're on every island in the Pacific. And if you come in a boat, the fairy terns will come out and greet you. They're very curious. In the case of the Marines, these silly little guys would insist on nesting on the gun emplacements. Leaving an egg on the gun emplacements. And the Marines would simply remove the egg, put it in a tree or in a safe place, fire the gun, and then put the egg right back where it was. So they became absolutely adored by the Marines during the war. There was a lot of poetry dedicated to the white. They're now called the white tern. It used to be the fairy tern.
You write in the introduction that you keep thinking in your mind about these magical islands of birds that you've seen. And you say this, memories of them help me accept the brevity of the time that lies ahead.
I think of so many of my friends. They go on a trip to Italy. They're sitting in before some magnificent building. And maybe their wives are there too. The wives are talking about the architecture, and the men are talking about their former careers, and they have no fallback at all. I'm a great arguer for having collateral activities in addition to what you do, and maybe I'm a bit of a goody-goody and trying to change other people, but it certainly does get you through the difficult years of approaching what is going to happen. And why I do it, I don't know. I don't know, but I get enormous pleasure from it. It is a way of dealing with the expectation of death.
Well, Mr. Cross, I wish you many, many happy birding days ahead. Thanks for talking with us.
Well, thank you. That was very enjoyable.
And you can find some of Theodore Cross's photos from his book, Waterbirds, on NPR's photo blog, The Picture Show. That's at npr.org. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.